The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyad.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange, live streamed for you every Monday morning with the rest of the show to drop later in the week. We hope you've missed us. We're glad to be back. We've missed you guys too. It seems we can't catch a break. We go on holiday for a week and the world falls apart. So that's what we're going to be taking a look at in Market Matters. Today, we're going to be taking a look at the war that's been escalating in the Middle East, the impact that that's going to have on global markets, and we're going to be trying to make sense of the market movements that we have been seeing thus far. Then we're going to look at something quite interesting on the deep dive side of things. After looking at war, one must look at puppies. We're going to be taking a look at pet insurance, so dig into that conversation as well. And we're going to wrap things up in our investor insights with some more insights around what we could potentially be interested in seeing play out in the markets in the rest of the coming weeks, rather. And we're adding another stock to our wall. Stick around for that so you can figure out what that is. And of course, there's an unfiltered opinion at the end of the show. Before we get into the one conversation that's going to be keeping us busy for quite some time, Si, I know next week? Next weekend, the Durban July. Mm. I know you're going. I know you've got an invitation to go. Mm. But do you have a mode of transport to get you there in style? Because there's a company out there that will let you hire a white Rolls-Royce Ghost for 2 hours at 14,500 rand.
And to be clear, it's Durban. It takes about 5 minutes. Like, Durban's not a big place. Like, there's traffic. But I mean, you travel for 2 hours in Durban, you've left the province.
Yeah, but you can do it.
Missed the Durban July. You are now in the Free State.
You can do it in a white Rolls-Royce Ghost. Or you can have a slightly more affordable Porsche 911 convertible at 9,500 rand. See, that's modest.
That tickles me. Okay, they got any Jaguars?
It doesn't look like it from what I'm seeing, but I'm sure we can phone them and arrange an E-Type for you.
Ooh, hang on.
Hopefully not one that's on like a flatbed or something, you know, like one that actually moves.
14,000 for 2 hours of a white Ghost Rolls Royce. Does it come as driver? It must stay in a cooler box.
Potentially. Let's have a look and see.
Huh, that's not bad.
You might get to drive yourself.
Ooh. Mind you, 2 hours, it's not driving me home. So
it's a supercar drop-off. So I assume someone's dropping you off. You are not driving yourself.
Sweet.
I don't know if I would pay 9,500 rand to have somebody else drive me. I want to do the driving myself.
Well, in the case of a 911, you'd absolutely want to drive it yourself. Trust me, I drove one once and it was still sticks in my head. Right. Man, that thing was stuck to the road. It was like, there's a gap. It's big enough for the car. Zoop, you're in the gap. But the Rolls Royce, I'm not sure I want to drive that. I think I need to be driven, sit in the back.
Yeah, I think if it's a race, I might consider it. But generally, yeah, you're right. There are other luxury vehicles out there. There are nice, fancy vehicles you can look at if you're interested in it. But is it worth it? I mean,
because I'm impressed.
None of the Durban July is worth it if you really think about it. But
correct, Amanda. and to be clear, it would be to impress my wife, and I think she's already. I mean,
she's
married
stuck with
me,
you, right? You
know, I mean, like,
and if she hasn't been impressed thus far, it might be a bit too late.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know how I'm getting there and back. So I mean, sure.
If anybody wants to pick us up for the Durban July, let us know. Who knows, right?
How are you coming too?
I don't know. Mm. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
But let's move on to market matters. Let's get into the only real conversation that is happening globally in financial markets at the moment, and that is the conversation around the war, the Israel-Iran war that has been escalating gradually, just took a serious turn over the weekend, and I suppose that's as best I can put it from a summary perspective. But let's get into that side. Let's get into just what this means, because unlike other wars in the past, this one markets seem to be more prepared for. We're seeing things play out the way they should. There's a lot of kind of certainty around, okay, if this is the direction the war proceeds in, then this is the rest of what's going to happen.
I think so. And obviously the key thing is oil, and it's a little bit higher, but not a heck of a lot. Mm. To be clear, it's well off the $60 we were at just a little while ago. And in fact,
we almost touched $80 on the futures. We touched $80 in opening session or the opening of Asian session. So we're currently around the $76-77 a barrel level, which is where we closed out Friday anyway. So that entire gap up has just kind of
come back.
Yeah, it's come right back.
I think it's the world saying two things. One is, notwithstanding Trump promised us 2 weeks, it's not the biggest surprise, perhaps, that Trump is misinformed, lies, can't count, something like that. But I think more importantly is, I mean, certainly it's a big deal, but how big is it really for oil? Are they going to close the Straits of Hormuz? Now, apparently, the Iranian parliament has voted to, but you close that, man, you're going to have, like, I don't know, war tank, what are those things? Aircraft carriers. Mm. I mean, America's going to reopen it in minutes and take it. So I can't help thinking that the threat to close it is just that, because the threat sends oil higher. Everyone likes that. You get more bang for your buck in terms of oil, but you don't actually close it, because sure, that would send oil to 100, but it would also get a response on the closure of the Straits. I mean,
so the interesting thing about the Strait is I've been keeping an eye on that and just getting different perspectives.
I thought you were going to say you'd visited it. I'm like, hey.
No. And I don't think I will be visiting it anytime soon, at least until the war has settled down, right? So I think what I've been keeping an eye on is the impact that then has on global supply, right? So supply chain, we know that that's a big factor, right? We know that Iran is one of the big producers from an oil perspective. We know that areas like the Strait of Hormuz, as well as the Suez Canal, are critical to the movement of ships throughout the world. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about the Strait of Hormuz is there's some reports that say that the bulk of that supply goes towards China, which then suggests that America actually does want Iran to close that, because if you're crippling your biggest trading partner in terms of oil supply, then that might put you in a better position from a trade war perspective, right? But the other side of that is you could just be pushing them further into the arms of Russia, which is already a thing at the moment,
and
doesn't
send their oil through. And I'm checking Vessel Finder, which I have been since I woke up yesterday, and that strait is no less busy than it ever was. No, absolutely. So then you force China into buying more Russian oil, which
doesn't really impact Russia. It impacts China in the short term, but not in the long term.
No, but would make it a much higher price, which Russia would really, really like.
Which would still, again, benefit China in the long term because the BRICS bloc.
Yes, yes.
Now, the other side of the coin is Europe. Europe also gets some of its supply through the Strait of Hormuz, and that would then necessitate that they would have to get their gas or their oil requirements from the US, which increases their dependency to the US, which is, again, something that benefits the US. So the closure of that strait seemingly, one, will drive oil prices higher in the short term, but might actually strategically benefit someone like the US, and perhaps that could be their involvement in wanting to get involved in the war. We know for a fact there's different conversations, different viewpoints around whether or not the US is a proxy for Israel or vice versa, those sorts of conversations. But at the end of the day, when we look at the global trade landscape and the geopolitical shifts, it's so important to start to look at this from a broader sense, not from the sense of, oh, this is going to impact one country, because it doesn't anymore.
No, 100%. I mean, it'll impact us, right? Oil at 100 is going to hurt us and might put interest rates
higher.
Oil
at 80 is going to hurt us.
Yeah, right now we are being hurt. Petrol prices are going up in July, and that's not going to be fun, and we'll see what happens for the rest of the year. But to your point, and it's the interconnectedness of everything, right? Dirk Gently told us about this a long time ago. There will be winners and losers, and China could be a short-term loser. loser. Russia could be a short-term winner. The short answer is it's weird because, I mean, so firstly, one of Trump's thing was to get oil down. Part of his plan is to get gas fees down, et cetera, et cetera. And that was kind of working with the help of Saudi Arabia, OPEC. Plus, of course, the challenge is Saudi Arabia, who can pump more, mm-hmm. sends a lot of their oil through that strait. So they can pump what they but they can't send it.
So the other thing that Saudi Arabia has to its advantage is I think they realized that this concentration risk was a problem because they started building a pipeline that runs out the other end of Saudi Arabia that doesn't go through the Strait of Hormuz, which would then mean that they can still maintain global supply at reasonable levels, right? And I think what's very clear about this is there will not be a shortage of oil.
No.
It's going to be a price. That's it. It's going to be about maintaining the price and how long the oil takes to get to you and all of that. And we've seen in the past, we saw in the pandemic, guys like China had stockpiled oil reserves and they started unloading strategic reserves to keep their own economies going. And I saw something quite interesting from Xi Jinping's perspective, or at least it was reported around what China's doing, is China's been preparing for a war. They've been conditioning their market to deal with supply shocks, to deal with shortages, to deal with consumers that are not spending, to deal with the pains of a global world that isn't as efficient as it could be. And for me, that means that, one, you're playing a long game.
Yeah.
And when the dust settles, your economy would have been well prepared to weather the storm. And I don't quite think that the US economy is as prepared. And this now feeds into the conversation you and I had around, does that then mean that by 2035, realistically, China could overtake the US as the biggest power?
I mean, absolutely. It's also, we've discussed this as well before, that the Chinese populace is better able to take the hardships. Now, not because they're happy about them, but because they don't have a choice. Whereas the American populace will just vote them out. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it's that sort of thing. Whereas China, and I know it's a cliche, China thinks long-term, etc., but it's that command economy. It absolutely is. To your point, they've been, you know, preparing for disruptions. I mean, think around the electric vehicle industry. Think around their semiconductor industry, their mobile phones and how they've managed all of that. You know, when Google said, we won't stay, China was like, cheers.
Okay.
Like, fine, leave, bye. You know, Facebook, it's like, dude, not here. Instead, you get Tencent with WeChat and the like. And, you know, it's not that China's been preparing for a war in the sense that they plan to start one.
No.
But that there are going to be some. And they saw what Trump did in the first term. They saw what Biden did in his term, which was, you know, he didn't, the only difference between Trump and Biden relative to China was that Biden does it via channels and Trump does it via social media.
Interestingly enough, you brought up the point on the population responding in a certain way. There have already been reports in America that people are protesting, saying Donald Trump must be removed because nobody wants a war. And I think what's interesting about this time around is the market citizens are saying, guys, we don't want our family members being dragged into a war that has nothing to do with us because of whatever relationship you may or may not have with another country. Yeah. There have been posts on X and other socials saying, well, Israel has nuclear weapons. They must fight this war for themselves. Why are they dragging us into this? So it's there's so much information out there. And I think we're definitely going to get information overload. That's absolutely going to happen. But in a time like this, I think back to a Marvel quote.
Marvel,
the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And this was from King Odin himself. A wise king never seeks out war, but he must always be ready for it. And this is probably going to be one of those wars that shows the world who was ready for what. Strategic alliances are going to be formed. Opportunities are going to be out there and opportunities in the market as well, right? So when you're looking at the gold price, you're looking at the dollar safe haven bet, you're looking at the platinum pricing, every single market, there is opportunity, whether it's to the upside or to the downside.
Mm-hmm.
Wars bring opportunity for better or worse.
Yeah.
Now, it's unfortunate that opportunity comes at the cost of civilian lives and the lives of people. And if we could, we would have no wars. But the reality is, Jimson over here are not presidents, and we don't have the luxury.
There's always been, and there always will be, and I mean, absolutely. And also, wars have fundamentally changed. I mean, the Ukrainian war has been like a drone war, which we'd seen bits of drones under Obama in Iraq, Afghanistan, but not to the level. The Iranian war is like there's no boots on the ground as yet. Probably won't be any boots on the ground.
We've got ballistic missiles. Why do I need to see people?
Yeah, no, 100%. But it is. I suppose it's the hardship of it, and that was one of the things which Churchill was always credited with in the Second World War, where he kept the English sort of population on board. They were happy with, not happy, but they were
not happy.
No, but they would go into the bomb shelters. They would send women and children, or certainly women, to the rural areas. They would have no sugar and whatever else, etc., etc. And it is that, and I can't help thinking that in this day and age, that would be a lot harder to sustain.
So then, I guess this is the parting thought on these war developments and what's happening is, yes, there's opportunity, but where do you look? So the traditionals are out there, the gold, the oil price moving higher, the logical things are out there. And I kind of feel like we've been seeing that shift for the last couple of weeks since, or at least for the last couple of months since President Trump has taken office, that markets are moving back to traditionals, what we know. We're moving out of things like crypto that are new age trading platform or trading and investment kind of solutions. And we're moving back to when things go down and we have to go back to a barter system, what works and what doesn't. Now, we're not saying that this is the end of things like crypto and all of that, but you're starting to see that shift. Markets inherently are saying this thing must blow over, and until it does, we're not gonna do anything outrageous.
Yeah, and they are, to be clear. I mean, you know, U.S. markets, they were closed on, when were they closed? Closed on Thursday for Juneteenth. They slightly red on Friday. Futures are slightly down this morning, but they're just off highs. So where do we go? I have a soft spot for Europe, although Europe has broken my heart so many times. I've had a soft spot and had that soft spot quite severely stabbed by the Europes. But they're kind of, and there's a war in the middle of Europe, but in the sense that they are, aside from the Ukrainian war, they kind of, do they not emerge as the middle ground reasonable people?
How? Because from...
Well, they're not attacking anyone. It's a good
not
start.
Not yet. You know how Britain is. They itch to get involved in wars. Yeah, they can't sit this one out.
I think Britain's worked out that they're going to get their ass handed to them if they try that.
Yeah, but I mean, they're still going to sit there and say, we can do the naval stuff. We can do the on-water fighting.
Not in 100 years.
Well,
I mean, when I say that, I mean 100 years ago, maybe. Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah, that's fair. But then you've also got Germany that's saying, you know what? We're going to raise up an army again. And we know what happened the last time they did that. We keep avoiding that conversation because nobody actually wants to talk about it.
Yeah, I know. As I said, Europe.
Disappointed you once, disappointed you many a times. But yes, the likes of Switzerland in Europe are a safe bet because in 200 years where we've waged wars, Switzerland has been neutral. Well, neutral in the sense that they'll hide money for the good guys and the bad guys, whoever you feel that's is the good neutral. Guy.
But that's interesting because then what about Scandinavian? I have no idea how to invest in Scandinavia.
The Nordic regions.
Yeah.
Look, the Nordic guys have been very much on the...
Spotify comes from there. Apart from that, I know nothing.
But they've been very much on the, we will do what's good for the population. We will build retirement villages and retirement cities and homes, and we will look after the people and all of that. So I don't see them getting dragged into a war per se.
No, I know, but then how do we invest in them if they're going to be sitting there eating their fish and driving their electric vehicles? How do we invest into it?
Amsterdam Stock Exchange, I guess. Starting point.
So we've got there's an Oslo Stock Exchange and Sweden and Denmark and
Oslo,
Finland.
Oslo, Norway, yeah.
So it's mostly, and interestingly, it's mostly oil and gas, Norway, technology. Mm-hmm. They've got aquaculture, shipping, consumer goods.
Well, we will ponder on that. We will figure it out. What we will not be doing is we will not be providing you with investment advice or financial advice because that's not what the show does. We're sharing our opinions. We're sharing our thoughts on these things. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on the developments of the Middle East and the global developments in general. Do you think that this war will end anytime soon? Do you think there will be any winners? We know there'll definitely be losers in this war. Do you think it's even necessary? We, for one, hold the view that it was never necessary to begin with. But that's just our view. We're just two guys sitting in a room recording a podcast, right? That's Market Matters. We're going to leave it on that note. We're going to get into the deep dive because we desperately need to talk about puppies. The war talk has all but worn us out. So stick around for that, dropping later in the week. But it's Market Matters. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into the world of pet insurance. We've just had a very tough conversation around the war and what wars mean for trades, investments, geopolitical movements, markets, and all sorts of things. And so we need to look at lighthearted things. We're going to be taking a look at how to protect the puppies, because puppies are important and we like puppies. Pet insurance has been something that not a lot of people have thought about, and I guess it depends on different life circumstances and all of that. And we know a couple of people that have very serious relationships with their pets. The likes of Pietri Redlingace, founder at Herenia, usual suspect on our show. Shout out to Pietri, we miss you. Come visit us sometime. Pietri has some birds and he absolutely adores his birds, and that's someone I can think of that would have something like pet insurance, right? But also anyone that has a dog, a cat, whatever it is that you have in the form of a pet, there's an entire market out there for pet insurance.
There is, and pets have got expensive. So a story recently, my sister, who has a lot of cats, one of them fell off a roof.
Oh.
30,000 rand.
The cat didn't land on its feet?
Yeah.
I thought that was a thing with cats.
Broke it three times. Multiple compound fracture of the right or left leg.
Someone should tell the cat it's running out of lives.
I think it's out. I think that was life number nine. But there is huge expense. And then, so then I wrote about it to my newsletter, and there were a lot of folks who were like, yeah, but also read the T's and C's.
Yes.
And that's part of the point. So, I mean, then it comes back to, do you self-insure? So then my sister's all over. So weirdly, she had signed up at the vet like a month before for a trial and stuff. And so she actually got some money back. But for her to cover, and she's got four or five cats and a dog. The chickens are gone. So it's just four or five cats and a dog. For her to insure all of those is going to cost her a pretty penny. So then it comes in, well, how often do you submit claims and the like? But then the flip to, can you afford to self-insure and et cetera?
What does self-insure mean?
Well, basically, instead of spending 1,000 rand a month doing pet insurance for five cats and a dog, put that into a savings account. And after 2.5 years, you've got 30,000. Except someone then emailed me, replied to my newsletter and said, our pet costs 86,000. Younger.
One thing I've learned about the pets is the more bizarre the injury or the service required, the more expensive it is. Especially if you've got rare breeds or pure breeds or anything of that nature, to then go in and do something as simple as an MRI or something as simple as some treatment for whatever it is, you don't know, right?
So
vets charge you for the consultation. They charge you for the scan. They charge you to tell you how they're going to fix the problem. Then after that, they still tell you it might not guarantee the fix.
Yes.
Which is effectively how doctors charge humans and everything as well. But at least with the human, you can then have a conversation with the human and say, do we have the surgery? What kind of conversation do you have with your pet?
Well, you don't, right? The question is, do we put you down or not?
How much do we... It's not even about how much do we love you. It's, does it make financial sense at some point, right? Because some of these things...
Can you have that? My sister, there was no conversation about can we afford it?
Yes.
I think there should have been, but maybe I'm a cold-hearted bastard big brother. I mean, who knows? But I kept saying, like, where's the conversation? Like this is a sweet little cat and all, and it's very pretty, but 30,000?
No, but so this is, I think it's less around the conversation being had and more around it highlighting how important pets are to people, how much people value the relationships always, they have.
Because
with their
when pets. I was a kid in the 80s, like 90s, there was no pet insurance.
No, there wasn't.
I remember one cat broke its leg, got hit by a car, and we went and got strapping on it. It didn't cost a lot because we had no money. Anyway, then we took that off. It turned out the other leg was also broken. But I mean, the cat was fine, inverted commas, but still lived to be incredibly old. I mean, so how come we didn't have pet insurance in the 80s and 90s? How come we, you know why? Because we weren't doing MRIs on cats and CAT scans on cats and those sort of things. I mean, those just didn't exist. We have suddenly bought all of our fancy human healthcare and said, well, we can do this for animals too, without the conversation being, well, I might love my cat, my dog, my budgie, my goldfish, but how much? But here's a trick. So back to the actual read the T's and C's. Mm. Of that however much money you're paying, a ridiculously large amount is going to admin and the agent, and very little is actually going to the insurance policy. Go check your medical aid and go check your home insurance. They will both probably have provisions for some level of pet insurance. Not paying 30,000, oh, not paying 80,000, and there are T's and C's. You know, yes, falling off a roof might not cover it, but your medical aid, my medical aid has pet insurance. Now, my cat hasn't left home in, well, except to go to the vet, in years, but so there's no need to claim. And yeah, my sister's home insurance also had some cover. It didn't qualify. It was only if hit by a car, but
there was still cover. Mm. There was still cover there. So it's interesting from a pet insurance perspective. I think a lot of it, again, comes down to the conversations that are being had. For some people, no amount is too much. For some people, the emotional bond, yeah, with your pet, there's no justification for the amount of money that you're spending there. For some people, it's, I mean, you've heard the saying where people say pets are like your children and, you know, you'll do anything for your children, and those conversations, pet owners out there genuinely feel that way. And it's not, we're not saying it's right or wrong, but the pet insurance thing is a big market, number one, mm-hmm, for insurers that are starting to realize this. And if you're not even realizing it from an insurance perspective, look at it from a consumer perspective. The likes of Woolies and the ShopRite Group have gone, wow, out and bought pet businesses that have things around the pet foods, the, mm-hmm, pet, mm-hmm, industries, and all. Absolute Pets was an acquisition.
Including fragrances, candy floss fragrance for when you bath your pet. No, I kid you not. ShopRite sent me a box of pet stuff for International, yeah, Pet Day. Candy floss fragrance for your cat or dog or something.
There we go, know, right? So it's not that this isn't an industry. It's, as you probably, as you mentioned, Si, it's probably that we haven't explored it as much as we had, or we hadn't explored it as much in the past as we do now, and things have come a long way. That being said, let's look at the pet insurance side of it. You touched on the T's and C's. Make sure you're aware of the T's and C's. There is the option to self-insure from that perspective. There are other providers out there that can provide you with the pet insurance and all of that. Mm-hmm. I think the decision, much like any other insurance product, is how much coverage do you really want versus how much coverage can you really afford? So if you're looking at things like insuring your vehicle, you can insure at market value or at retail value. Unfortunately, we don't have a market value and a retail value for Barry the budgie, you know what I mean? So becomes difficult to then kind of quantify. And I guess perhaps that's where all of the admin fees and things go into, is to say, how much pet insurance do we give you and how much premium do we charge you? And this must make actuaries' lives a living hell to try and figure out the risk associated with pets, understanding that they can't communicate, hey, I'm about to take a walk in a dangerous part of the neighborhood.
And then does it not maybe come down to, because to your point, I mean, I know people who have immigrated overseas, taken their dogs to the vet and put them down. Mm-hmm. Like, these were patently not part of the family type. If you're the sort of person who, when the bill for 80,000 rand comes for your cat, or 30,000 for your budgie or whatever it might be, if you're the sort of person who's going to be phoning your bank manager and saying, please, I need an extension on my credit card, then you need insurance. Mm-hmm. If you're the sort of person who's saying to the vet, hey, bull,
it's a lot,
put it in the pot, then maybe you don't. And it maybe that's the conversation that needs to be had. Now, I know, for example, so our cat's 15 years old and that's all fine. There's no, when I say all fine, like she doesn't go out and etc. But if my wife and I got a new cat, the conversation my wife would be with, like, hell yeah, we're going to pay. And it's like, well, then we better get some pet insurance.
Okay. So
or self-insure.
So if we're getting pet insurance, does it cover exotic pets? Now, I say exotic because people out there,
I know the people
have in the snakes old days, and tarantulas.
You had a cat or a dog. Now that's you it. Have a cat, but it must be a this cat or that cat, or it's a tarantula, or surely you don't pet insure a tarantula.
If you pet insure a python and it eats you, who gets paid out there? The python or you? Because who was the pet then? Mm. I have questions, right? Again, so
I have questions anyway, but yes.
But these are the considerations, right? Also, if we're talking exotics, let's talk about rare breeds, right? So yeah, let's go into rare breeds of things like parrots, rare breeds of dogs. You mentioned the cat. What is that? There's a particular cat, the Maine Coon. It's a cat known for its problems. It's known for having heart problems. It's known for having kidney problems. That inherently, I suppose, makes it a higher risk animal to insure. because of its hereditary issues that it comes with, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you then take that pet, or you then have a pet like that, you inherently then say, I must have pet insurance, I suppose, because then you know that the costs are going to be high.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've got this whole designer pet thing. Like, I mean, it's become like when we were talking about luxury goods. Pets have become luxury. It's just weird. That's what I'm saying. People, it's weird.
It's just weird.
Get a cat from the SPCA. Anyway, absent of that. I mean, if you're going and getting a designer pet, then insure it, because you're insuring your handbag. You're insuring, I mean, then insure it. Like, I, man.
And the other thing is, as well, is if you're getting a designer pet, I love, that's what we're calling them, designer pets. Designer pets come with things that might not typically be covered, right? So your coverage might fall short. Then yeah. What? Is there a gap cover for pet insurance? Because now where are we going with this?
I mean, if there isn't, there will be in time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and what is this? This is insurance companies. We live in a zero growth environment. So how do insurance companies grow? Well, they got to steal from each other, steal clients from each other. Or they just come up with new, weird and wonderful ways to sell you in insurance. I mean, you know, like medical aids are really bad at what they do. So what do they do? Don't worry, we'll sell you a gap cover. Well, why don't you just fix your medical aid? Why don't you make
it? Why don't you just cover it for what I'm paying you for?
A friend of mine had a baby. The medical aid only paid about 30% of the cost. And mm-hmm. then the gap cover paid the rest. Fun fact, they're both the same company.
That's going to be a conversation for another deep dive, because that's something else that we should probably dig into there. But when we look at the pet side of it, I think the parting thought is exactly as you said, Si, you hit the nail on the head with the fact that designer pets probably need insurance.
Yeah.
You should probably insure your designer pet.
And then when you get the insurance, read the T's and C's deep. Get lots of quotes. Really understand it. I mean, some of the numbers that were coming through were like what you're actually being covered for and the amounts and stuff. And on the sticker, it says, you know, up to X amount of insurance. But when you look into the details, it's like, but it's capped here and it's capped there and
This is the conversation that we had in our last episode when we were looking at the funeral insurance and we were looking at the funeral policies. It was down to the T's and C's. It was down to making sure that you are adequately covered. And that is where the insurance companies look as a default to not pay out a claim. So when you submit a claim, they say, hey, this doesn't line up with clause A, subsection B of page this on paragraph this or whatever, and therefore we're not going to pay it out, right? So if the insurers are putting in those clauses to protect themselves, you need to be well aware of those clauses and assess whether or not they line up with what it is that you're looking for, of course.
And here's a top tip. Assuming your vet doesn't sell, I mean, I remember in the days when a vet, all it did was do inoculations. Now the vet's like a grocery store for pets. Anyway, assuming your vet doesn't sell pet insurance, ask them, because they're the coalface. They've seen people come in. They've seen claims.
Right.
They understand. So it's the same with your doctor. I mean, if you want to buy a medical aid, my wife's had lots of conversations with medical practitioners saying, in your experience, which is the best? Now, it there's T's and C's in terms of it, but they'll have perhaps a better sense and understanding than just phoning your current insurer and say, hey, stick me on with pets.
Well, to be fair, your insurer is incentivized to sell you a product without understanding your need for that product. Whereas your vet would then, as you say, have a better understanding of, hey, you have this type of cat prone to these type of ailments. This is probably what I've seen. Perhaps they might even draw on past experiences and say, this insurer particularly paid out well and those sorts of things.
Correct.
Which is why on our show, we tell you to seek the advice of the professionals in those spaces, because this, again, is not investment advice on pet insurance. It will never be investment advice on which pet insurance to get. And if you haven't noticed, we haven't even named a single insurance provider, because we're not in the habit of doing that, right? So there are pet insurance things out there. Do your research, do your homework around it, speak to your vet about it. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the experiences, because perhaps you've had different experiences from a pet perspective. Perhaps pet insurance has saved your pet and you would be without a pet by
In my sister's case, it was just a broken leg, but at 30,000.
30,000 rand broken leg. That's a lot for a broken leg.
So I smashed my leg in 11 places. It cost me 13 rand. Okay, I went to Grooteskeer and it was the 80s, but still, the 90s. Anyway,
the 90s.
But a quick last thing. I ran the numbers of my sister. Mm. If she's self-insured, she would be ahead today. So if she was putting, instead of buying the insurance, she was putting that premium into a little savings account every month, when that 30,000 Rand bill came, she would have had well in excess of 30,000 Rand in that account. Now, the risk is you get designer cat, pet, dog, goldfish, whatever, and on day four.
That's it. I was just going to say, so your downside risk is you don't know when the injury is going to happen. And the cat's never going to tell you, or the dog's never going to tell you, hey, I swallowed a chew toy I shouldn't have swallowed, and now we need to go to the vet.
That was the fun thing. Another friend, the cat was very sickly and all takes it off, scans everything, 3,500 Rand, boy, your cat's got indigestion.
There we go.
A Rennie's would have solved the problem.
There we go. But again,
but a cat can't tell you.
And that's part of the problem. I think that's inherently part of the problem with a pet is you're so worried. You're trying to scenario plan for every possible scenario. You don't know what you're dealing with. You don't know if your cat has pre-existing conditions. You don't know what type of routine checkups you're taking your cat or dog for. And at the end of it, it was just a bad gummy or a bad whatever that they had, you know? And you can't exactly go back and yell at the pet and say, well, you shouldn't have eaten that. Because whether you'd say that or not, they might just do it again.
They might just do it again.
Pet insurance, it's expensive. It makes no sense. But neither do designer pets. That's where we're going to leave the conversation. That's the deep dive. We're going to leave it on that note. We're going to get into investor insights. We're going to be taking a look at deep fakes and understanding how to safeguard against those and the implications of those. And we're also going to be taking a look at our wall. And wrapping things up with investor insights, we're taking a look at the rise of deep fakes and what you need to be aware of. This is quite a tough topic because we don't really know where it starts and where it ends. It seems that this is just the beginning. And as artificial intelligence continues to advance, it seems this problem could become a real pain or a real nightmare. But nonetheless, I had a conversation this morning on SABC's Morning Live around deepfakes and just what happens.
You were up early.
Well, when you phone me, I'm up at the same time.
I know,
really?
But I have to wake you. I take that back. I don't wake you. You're already awake.
That's it, right? So, and again, I was watching the markets overnight anyway. And so, yeah. But the deepfake conversation is one that definitely isn't going to go away. If anything, it's getting scarier and scarier by the day because things are not only becoming more realistic, they're becoming harder to kind of detect in terms of whether or not something is real, something is authentic, something is fake. And every single time we do this, every single time we shoot the podcast, we talk, everything that we do online is documented, which means we're giving some AI bot out there more information to synthesize and process and a better chance at them replicating or creating a deep fake.
100%. And you know, what I can do in my $20 a month ChatGPT with VO3 is insane, and I've got no skill. So imagine what the person with skill. There's a really, really simple response to how we deal with deep fake is don't believe anything you see until it comes from a verifiable source. And by verifiable source, I don't mean that it was definitely Jimmy's cousin's aunt four times removed offset in Pilansburg. What I mean is like a mainstream media. Now, I know all the peeps out there, mainstream media. No, trust me. Mainstream media is what's going to save your ass in this deep fake war, because what is happening is incredible. I expected a lot more of it in the U.S. presidential election last year. We got a small amount of it, but it's going to become more and more. And the problem is particularly on social media, people either support the view, in which case they don't care if it's fake or not, or they don't support the view, in which case they don't care if it's real or not. It's just that polarization. But what we are seeing in what is very early days is just ridiculous, and it's just going to get more so. And it means that, quite simply, we can't trust what we see with our own eyes, which is totally weird. Because I mean, I remember when Photoshop was the scary thing and how they could change stuff. I mean, but that took a highly skilled individual, and then how did they deliver it to me? They had to put it into a publication of a sort, etc. Now there's some kid with a $200 ChatGPT sitting in the basement of his parents' house, no job, no prospect, and they can make whatever they want, and
it's terrifying. Is what it is. It is absolutely terrifying. And to your point, Sai, around the fact that we didn't always have this. We didn't always live in this world of deep fakes, but they're becoming more and more advanced when you sit there and you see just what can be produced and what can come out of it. It leads you to believe, again, when you're saying, look at verifiable sources. Someone told me something interesting about how sort of your scammers are now using deep fakes, right? People are getting quite clever in that I now know how to plant a phishing email and send a phishing email into a network, right? For the sake of this conversation, the phishing email goes into Anglo Platinum. It doesn't, we're not saying anything about Anglo's security system, but for argument's sake, it goes into there. It goes into a legit, it goes into a legitimate email address. Mm. One person in the entire business might click on it, and that gives the scammers or the hackers access to that mail network.
Yeah.
Then you pair that with a deepfake video from someone that would be a normal internal employee of Anglo, a high-ranking official, a CEO, an executive member that would be a trusted person. And now suddenly you're able to send out emails to a Jimmy and a Simon outside of the Anglo ecosystem from a verified Anglo email address, for example, using someone that would look like they would belong in that organization. So now how do you tell it apart? Because as you said, look for a verified source. That for me would be a verified source.
A friend of mine's a boffin in cryptology, and he's been involved in this for decades. And he used to do pen testing for the for certain businesses, penetrator testing 20 years ago. And like none of them even came close to passing. And that was 20 years ago. And it's small things. There was that CEO, or the CFO, who was, he had a Zoom meeting with the CEO and transferred 25 million. And it wasn't the CEO. It was a whole, it was a deep fake. Or is this just them cleverly colluding to get $35 million. I mean, who knows?
Who knows?
But that's just it. We don't even know if the fake deep fake is fake now. I mean, it's just, you know, loop de loop. And it's just, I mean, to me, it's, you know, like on my Twitters, I got my following section. So these are reasonably people I trust. And as soon as I go to the For You, I just assume it's all lies.
Mm.
Because, I mean, just start with that perspective. And then rather than, in the olden days, we believed it gave you benefit of the doubt.
Mm.
That's out the window now. Mm. That has to be out the window. Because to your point, you can get an email from a CEO of a listed company and it's not from them.
Yeah, but the deep fakes goes as well with the impersonations, right? We've spoken about this before. How many times a month do you get impersonated on one social platform and you can't shut down all of those accounts? And all someone really needs to do is move around an underscore, spell Simon Brown slightly differently, maybe with a capital S or a small S. And because we don't verify, because no one actually sits there and says, I'm going to go and check what Simon Brown's handle is or which actual account belongs to Simon Brown, it's easy to then impersonate you and therefore easier to then create the deep fakes. The ones I've seen in terms of the impersonating accounts and the ones that I've shared with you from those individuals that have pretended to be you, someone follows me because you follow me and then immediately copies your videos as you have them on your timeline. Mm. And I am able to spot it, one, because I know you. I know the things you wouldn't post. I keep an eye. So I genuinely keep an eye on like average things, average followers. If your followers were in the 10,000s range and suddenly one morning your followers are at 300 or 400 or whatever, it's a new account. You know what I mean? But a lot of people don't think to look for these things. And that's part of the problem with the deepfake. That's part of why it creates such a big concern, because the red flags you're looking for, you don't even know which red flags to look for. And I guess the big, perhaps let's do that. Let's see if we can get into some of the obvious red flags. The obvious red flags, and we've stated this on the show before, is if someone is saying, here's an investment product, we need X amount of money for you to invest in, and that person happens to have a profile picture that looks like my face or Simon's face, it's not us. Don't give them money.
Yeah.
Just don't.
It's also, financial products are generally, oftentimes they are sold, but they're not sold in DMs.
That's it.
They sold via marketing. And look, so there was, the FSCA phoned me a year or so ago. There had been a WhatsApp thing, which apparently was me and I was taking people's money. And with respect, the person doing it patently had a, it was not, I mean, I have a white Caucasian accent, folks. Like, this was not a white Caucasian accent. Just saying. So you think it's Simon Brown, and they were like, oh, but you've... I'm like, look, it's just not me. Mm. And then eventually something, and they sent me a... And I'm like, 1 second in, I'm like, you spot the voices.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just...
I think it's easier for you because... Everybody's sure. listened to your voice over the years.
This is true.
And so people have heard it on various platforms, various mediums. Yeah, yeah. But now that creates a new problem, Si, because now I can go and take some other AI technology, record your voice, put it over a video that has your face.
When we go to deepfake, it is completely and absolutely, that is now complete.
Anything is possible
and to the point, I would need to do a WhatsApp call with you. Well, that can be deepfaked.
And even then, I mean, why would I suddenly do a WhatsApp video call out of the blue with someone I've never met before? You know what I mean?
But
I think this is the challenge that we're now going to be facing with the deepfakes and with the rise of technology, effectively, is how do you then verify yourself? Because now someone can create a deepfake, and unfortunately, your social media platform then has the burden of proof from a verification perspective, sitting on Simon to say, you must verify that you are the legitimate Simon Brown. And
so this is
almost taking the side of the deepfake video over the side of the original person.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing, which, again, my friend is a cryptologist expert, has been wondering with for decades. It's what Mark Shuttleworth solved ultimately verifying individuals. Sam Altman's got the one world coin type thing where he wants to try and verify you with eyeballs.
Retinal scans, yes.
I'm not going to give my retinal scan to Sam Altman. But how do we verify people online? Mm-hmm. In the face-to-face world, it's
easy. Set up a meeting, go and do that. But absolutely. You can't set up a meeting with every single person.
Correct, Amanda.
So how do you protect yourself? How do you, again, your default point, your starting point, assume everything is a lie until otherwise proven. Yeah. That's a good safety point.
I mean, to the point, there's ways around it. So I have a vanity page, so you can go to my vanity page. My Twitter account links to that. That links to my vanity, you know, mm-hmm. and therefore you've got a bit of a loop there. Mm. But, I mean, people don't, I mean, some folks know about that, but a lot of folks don't know that I have a vanity page. If you look at my profile, it's there, but if there's a fake profile, it's not there, and you might not realize it's not there. You talk around number of followers. I mean, you can buy old Twitter accounts. Twitter account is, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. You can buy a 16-year-old Twitter account. You can load it with
the history. You can clean out the pictures.
Correct.
Yeah,
exactly. So you can, I mean, you can, now, you can look through and maybe spot the problems, but if you're not expecting
an
to be scammed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the short answer is, particularly in, okay, I mean, there's lots of aspects to this around relationships and everything else, but just be suspicious and maximally more suspicious if someone's trying to sell you something, whatever it is they're trying to sell you.
That's
whether it be love or bubbles or
love or bubbles
or hot tips, just be suspicious.
Be suspicious, folks. We've lost our inquisitive nature. We are now too trusting as a populace, and that goes the world over. Be suspicious, and that's where we're going to leave that particular conversation. We're going to get into our stock pick. Probably going to be one of the easiest stock picks, and it is BlackBerry. Yeah, you see, the look on your face tells me you didn't believe they still existed.
Research in motion. BlackBerry.
Yes.
Yeah, they do exist. They do some auto car stuff.
They have software. Results coming out tomorrow.
Oh.
Nobody's even paying attention, I don't think.
Okay. BlackBerry, what do they do?
I think they still make cell phones. At least in part.
Okay, hang on. I need to pull this up. They make cell phones.
I think so.
I don't know. What do they do? No. What do
pull
they
up
do?
The, pull up the share
provides
price.
Intelligent security software and services to enterprise and governments worldwide.
Okay. There
secure
we go.
Communications. Oh, QNX. QNX is the car stuff and licensing. Huh? Mm-hmm. That's the segment. Okay.
$4 a share.
$4 a share. Enterprise File Sync, BlackBerry Secure Suite, a patented epileptic. Curve cryptography. I don't know what they do.
So BlackBerry, back in 2021,
mm-hmm.
got as high as almost $30
around
the pandemic. That's not high, considering in 2008, in May of 2008, probably around peak financial crisis, that share was trading at as high as $144, currently at $4.
Yeah, and that was just the 2008. The iPhone had come out the year before, and we didn't yet realize it was going to completely take its kneecaps out.
Well, to be fair, I don't think. I think
one of the kneecaps was taken out by iPhone, but I also think Research in Motion and the team at BlackBerry took out their own other kneecap when their business model just didn't seem to make financial sense, and then they tried to change it, and the market just said, well, then no. I think BlackBerry is a prime example of what not listening to your consumer does for your brand.
Interesting. So, and it's compared. I mean, so this competitors is CrowdStrike. It's like, okay, so that's the space they put. Because I knew about
That's the space they've now pivoted into. Is it a space that's even worthwhile looking at if we're looking at someone like a BlackBerry versus a CrowdStrike? Because we know where we stand on CrowdStrike.
Yeah.
We know that even after the hack or the shutdown that we saw, everybody still is a CrowdStrike client. We haven't really seen a major fallout right?
We have not.
The question then becomes is, what do we do with BlackBerry? I, for one, have no use for a stock like BlackBerry in any portfolio. No offense to the guys at BlackBerry. I'm sure you guys do some really good work.
Sure.
I would put it in the avoid category because I can't really see what value I get out of the business.
Agreed. I just don't see why. They're doing some interesting stuff, but so are others.
And, so are other people.
And, you know, it's like when you find a sector, go find yourself a really, really robust, strong growth sector, and then find the best two or three stocks in it and buy those at good prices. Go find the dog is like lying sneaking in the corner because you haven't bought a pet insurance, so it's not going to go anywhere. Just like buy the winners. Does BlackBerry become a winner? Sure. Then I'll buy it at $40, but I've got some security of tenure.
That's it.
Right now
at $4, I can't see anything that's appealing about it. I can't see why someone would look at a stock like that. And even if you're saying, look, I want to get in on a good value stock at a really cheap price or whatever, there are so many other sectors with so many other good value stocks out there. You do your research, you get your vote in on whatever stock you have. As you said, whatever sector you believe in, whatever players are in that sector. For us, I don't see where we find the value here. But again, that's our opinion on that, because I feel like I have to stress this. I feel like we're having to now have conversations about saying that these opinions are not financial advice. There's disclaimers on this podcast for that very, very reason. And even with those disclaimers, people out there might not choose to listen to those disclaimers. Those are our opinions. It's Sai's opinion. It's my opinion. The Jimson opinion is not the universal opinion. It's not the global constant. Don't take it as that. It is just a thought on that. And that's why we're going to put it. We're in agreement where we're putting it.
Yeah, it makes 1 cent free cash flow per share.
1 cent free cash flow per share.
$4 share.
I don't think we can run away fast enough from that. We're going to run away from that.
You managed to find one for the avoid.
There we go, right? Properly avoid that. That's where we're going to leave that particular conversation. That's where we're going to leave the show as well. But before we leave, we're going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion of the week, because that is exactly what we do. We love giving you these. They make us happy. We hope they make you happy. This week's unfiltered opinion is this. Millennials have lived through too damn much. There have been pandemics. So there have been wars. There's been the Y2K bug. I don't think I can fit
9/11, '08, US downgrade.
The Great Recession.
I mean, just the whole. Yeah,
and these are considered black swan events. These are considered once-in-a-lifetime events. We've spoken about this in the past.
Except they have three in a weekend.
That's it. How many once-in-a-lifetime events are we going to go through? What lies next? The rise of the internet, the rise of artificial intelligence, the rise of electrified vehicles. Everything's happened in one lifetime, effectively. People are tired, eh?
Yeah.
People are tired. That's the unfiltered opinion. That's the show. Please remember, like, share, subscribe, comment, give us some thoughts. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.